All right, well, like, so, you know, we have this notion that Oklahoma is monolithic, that everybody thinks the same way, that we're only this thing. When in fact, if you look at the way people voted mm-hmm. in the election, yeah, a lot, I mean, we're blood red.
Yeah.
As far as like the counties go. Yeah,
every county,
all 77 counties went for Trump. But, you know, when you talk about the percentages, if we're talking, you know, I can't remember what the actual breakdown was, but if it was 40% of mm-hmm. the state, well, that's still a lot of people.
Yeah.
If 40% voted for Hillary Clinton, we're talking a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so I really feel like those people should have a voice.
Yeah, exactly.
And should express themselves. Otherwise, you're going to be treated mm-hmm. like you maybe deserve to be treated, which is like, you know, they're going to steamroll you.
Mm-hmm.
And no, you should stand up to the steamroller.
Yeah. And I mean, there is this, like, on the conservative side, you know, there's this big push to be like, well, exercise your rights, you know, go vote, buy your guns, use your free speech. But like, uh-huh. at the same time, both sides need to do all those things.
That's right.
Not necessarily buy a gun if you don't want one, but
well, yeah, let's forget about the whole gun thing. But like when you're but yes, that absolutely does apply. They don't want that, you know, that side doesn't want the others, their opponents in the war for the soul of the country to exercise their, you know, their right to free speech and to, you know, and to express themselves. Because look at what's happening right now.
Yeah.
with the you know, the town hall meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, there's a lot of pissed off people in the mm-hmm. world right now.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of, yes, yes, Kellyanne Conway is right. That, you know, they're pissed off because they didn't win the election.
Mm-hmm.
But who gives a shit, honestly?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you have a right to be pissed off.
Yeah.
And you have a right to express yourself. And they have, and your congressional representatives
mm-hmm.
have a responsibility mm-hmm. to listen to you.
Yeah. Responsibility, but maybe not a obligation, as they have ignoring.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, we have I'm going to call out names here. Senator Langford,
yeah.
James Langford chose to have a call-in town hall meeting where
mm-hmm.
you know, you had to register and you were undoubtedly screened
yeah.
for it. But as far as like, and this was during the recess
mm-hmm.
when everybody's supposed to be home, you know, and out there talking to constituents.
Mm-hmm.
He chose not to speak to his constituency directly
yeah.
because, you know, he sees what's happening to, you know, like, you know, people, you know, really, you know, these, his colleagues all over the country
mm-hmm.
who have town hall meetings, and it becomes very uncomfortable for them because
yeah.
they're having to face up not to just friendly audiences anymore,
yeah.
but people who are pretty angry
yeah.
about the way that they are choosing to legislate or how they are choosing to approve Trump's appointments
mm-hmm.
to his cabinet.
Yeah,
you know, and so, you know, look, if you want to be a senator or a congressman,
yeah,
you know, it's not all about perks. It's not all about smooth sailing.
Yeah,
you know, it's about really the down and dirty of governing.
Yeah,
and
it's public service.
It's public service, and part of public service is sometimes getting your hands dirty,
mm-hmm.
and being in town hall meetings during a time
mm-hmm.
when a significant part of the population is really angry about the way about the direction things are going right now, you have an obligation to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
And that's what the that's what people are saying now. Do your job.
Yeah.
You hear the chants at all of these town hall meetings. Do your job.
Yeah. And I mean, it sucks that, like, I mean, obviously the system is set up in a way and has been set up in this way so that all of the people making the laws are making the laws that benefit them. And so they don't have to get rid of their own perks.
Right.
And so we can clearly see, we can drive that way and clearly see how screwed up the priorities of the state legislature is, because there's a big white tarp over half of the building and shows us this is where money's going and not into education and infrastructure.
Right. You know, when there are, you know, when you have a you know, like these, you know, House Oversight Committee is, you know, is putting, you know, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee is you know, going to look at more questions about Hillary Clinton, who is at this point a private citizen, and is not going to look at, you know, at Trump's ties to Russia or whatever. Then that's misplaced priorities.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, if you've got a white, you know, if in the at the state capitol you have a white tarp over half the building, and they're working at sort of like, you know, burnishing the image of this building, and they're, you know, and they're, you know, interested at this on the other hand at cutting out essential, you know, social life jacket kind of, you know, programs.
Yeah.
You know, then that's obviously a displacement of or displaced priorities.
Yeah. I brought up free will earlier, because it really is something that, and also earlier you asked me what I believe, and it's that I'm full-blown, like, Sam Harris atheist, so... I'm much less vocal about it, because I like having friends, but...
I mean, if everybody talked like Richard Dawkins, you know...
Dawkins is probably the most... Christopher Hitchens, who is now dead, so can't be as vocal about it, but if everybody talked that way all the time,
he can't be as vocal about it.
Yeah. if everybody spoke like Richard Dawkins does about religion in Oklahoma,
it would be bloodshed.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. People, there would be actual violence happening.
right.
And so I refrain from spouting as many things, even though I do think very loudly. but I bring up free will because, to an extent, how we treat people in society, and that if we set up either through political means of having a social life jacket or just through charitable means, if you want to take the libertarian route and just, oh, well, I will donate to charity, you still have to consider the fact that on one hand it's like, oh, this homeless person is lazy and they don't want to get a job or whatever. On a regular basis, I walk out of this building and see one to two homeless people.
Sure.
But on the other hand, what was in place in our society, what was in place in our community to, for one, help these people and stop them from getting in this situation, and two, what is in place to rescue them from the situation.
Well,
and,
I mean, a good portion of those people are mentally ill.
Sure.
You know, I, like, clinically, mentally ill, and during the Reagan years, they a lot of those people were kicked out of mental hospitals,
mm-hmm.
and so because they a good portion of them are not getting the treatment that they need,
mm-hmm.
then then they are out there, and we shouldn't do like our city did, which is to institute these anti-panhandling laws, because you don't like seeing the guy stand on the overpass on Western, and with a sign.
Mm-hmm.
No, you should do something about it that mm-hmm. is going to prevent that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I think there is that impulse with a lot of people that is just like, they should just get a job. Chances are they can't.
Yeah.
They can't, or they can't hold it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to do something.
Yeah.
In order to pull those people out, whether it in some cases they have debilitating drug dependencies,
mm-hmm.
There should be more sort of, I don't know. I'm kind of a socialist when it comes to this kind of thing. I feel like if you take care of those things, then it won't be a problem.
Yeah.
It's a lot less expensive to to have preventative or
mm-hmm.
or restorative measures than it is to just leave it alone.
Yeah.
And then, eventually it's going to become such a preponderance of a problem that you're not even going to be able to deal with it anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, so around here, and maybe just in like what I hear from conservative circles or conservative friends that I have, is sort of...
Do you have a lot of conservative friends?
Not many, but I do try my best to communicate with them and see sort of, I'm over here in this echo chamber and
right.
they're over there in this echo chamber. And
yeah.
So we have to try to make sure to continue to communicate, continue to understand each other, mm. even though we may disagree.
Right.
And so maybe this whole perception of like pull yourself up by your bootstraps sort of thing.
It's hard when you don't have any fucking boots.
Exactly.
You know?
And so I don't believe in free will, not because of social things, but mainly because of science. But if we take a more deterministic approach
mm-hmm.
to how we structure society, rather than a free will approach to society, we would be able to sort of analyze as to why do people go crazy? Why do people shoot up schools? Why do people, or even on the like rich side, why do people decide to, why do corporations decide to pollute? And really it's less because they choose to do so. And I think more because it's the game that we've set up for them to play. And so,
but it's still a choice, right? It's you're choosing to do that. It's like you pollute that river rather than, taking a more responsible approach to disposing of those
mm-hmm.
chemicals. It's fucking cheap, you know. I'm just gonna cart these 55 gallon drums over here at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
and nobody's gonna know.
Well, yeah, but like, yes, it's cheaper to pollute, and there's the whole like, well, it's a lot harder and more expensive to, find safe ways of disposing of this, or even just finding a different way of
producing that is more efficient
is,
and doesn't have so much waste. Right?
But at the same time, everything in our society and everything that is capitalism
mm-hmm.
tells us that the more money that you make and the less money that you spend, you win. You are winning this game if you are making more money. And so is it really a choice that, well, on one hand, I can choose to pollute less and choose alternative means of production, but at the same time, like, I'm winning less if I spend more money on that. So I feel like, in a way, we've taught each other and taught this whole society to be assholes.
Well, but there's also plenty of other information out there that has been gleaned over the course of of the past half century or longer of environmental activism that says no, you don't have to do that, and you can behave responsibly, and you can't, and you don't have to be a dick about it, and you can still be an industrialist. You can you can still be a capitalist, and all of that. Just be responsible about it.
Sure.
Don't be like dick over your descendants. There's a lot of people who just think, I'm going to behave this way and I'm going to run my business this way, and even if it kind of destroys the environment, well, I won't have to be here when
exactly.
it's destroyed, so who gives a shit?
Yeah, and that's because as a society we value ourselves and our money much more than we value some of these other things that don't cost money. Whatever you say, being more responsible.
Right.
Being more responsible does not give me more money.
Right.
Being worrying about my posterity does not give me more money.
Right. Right. Yeah, I know. But whenever we've had these kind of like whenever we always have these arguments.
Yeah.
As a society, and it usually takes a hard lesson to force people to think a little differently.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes the river in Cleveland catching on fire, literally,
yeah.
for you to start to think about like dumping pollutants into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's it's like during the 1960s particularly, which I think that's when the river caught on fire, but during that time people were just like pitching shit out their windows.
Yeah.
Like as they're driving down and it's like you picked up your burger at McDonald's and well, I don't need this anymore. Throw it out the window.
Yeah.
And so there was not any sort of concern that was going to be a problem until like you look around everywhere.
Yeah.
And everything looks really shitty because we've been messing up our world.
Yeah.
When we've had these sort of like, I don't advocate environmental cataclysm by any stretch, but I do think that we should be learning from our mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that happens. Okay. Like take for example, did you watch The Crown? We talked about it in class, right? Okay. So there's this one episode where they talk about this, what they used to call the London fog. But in this case, it was sort of like this pressure system kind of like settled over London and trapped all of the smog from the coal burning plants. and killed literally thousands of people. There was zero visibility. Oof. People are in hospitals, coughing up lungs. It was horrible, and it was things you know, things were really bad. And there was another incident like just a few years earlier in Pennsylvania where that happened. And so people kind of learn their lessons and they say, well, maybe we shouldn't be like polluting our atmosphere because it can come back and it can literally kill us by doing that. Just be aware that things, of the consequences of your actions.
Sure.
You know, it's part of being an adult, I think.
Yeah. Because I'm not making the argument for myself, because I obviously agree with everything you're saying, because I'm
rambling as
right
it might
now,
be.
Yeah, right now I'm playing devil's advocate, but like and I'm playing this devil's advocate to sort of show how sort of heartless our society has taught us to be.
Oh yeah.
And so yeah, to an extent, like being more responsible does help us to be less pollutant, for example. But on the other hand, like once you make it, you don't have to deal with these trash filled streets. You can be over there in your tower.
Build a wall.
Yeah.
Right? That's what a lot of rich people do, right? They just kind of wall themselves off and choose not to acknowledge what's out there. Or you can be, responsible about it. You can, and you can start using your money to maybe ameliorate some of these things.
Yeah. But I mean, to a certain extent, that doesn't work on these people. I think it's just like
it does with some of them.
Yeah, but at some point, it's sort of like common knowledge now that certain like more successful Wall Street employees are actually like psychopaths. Or
like,
not even psychopaths,
Mark Shkreli
like,
kind of people?
Yeah, sociopaths to the extent that, like, the more heartless and the less empathy that they have, the more money that they get, the more successful that they become.
Right.
And it actually benefits you to just have less empathy.
Yeah, that's the, when you had my class, we would talk about that sort of, like, Bond villain. Kind of attitude, which was
Kim.com.
The Kim.coms, the Martin Shkreli's, all of these people who are just like, fuck it, more money, less problems, right? and then just kind of like actively being dicks, Shkreli, he increased the cost of those AIDS drugs by something on the order of 700%.
Yeah.
Just because he could.
Yeah.
All right.
Or even worse, more Bond villain-y,
the
Wu-Tang album.
Yeah. For people who don't know exactly what we're talking about, the Wu-Tang Clan made an interesting decision to record an album called Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, where they made one copy of it, and then they put it up for auction, and Martin Shkreli bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And he did so right about the time that he had upped the cost of that AIDS drug. So not only was he making the difference between life and death for a lot of people.
Yeah.
He was also just being a dick about it, right?
Well, he used the life and death money to
buy
himself an exclusive album and not give it to anyone else.
That nobody else is going to get to listen to. And, and occasionally he'll go out and he'll play snippets of it just to basically to fuck with people.
Yeah.
Right. There is that sort of impulse on a lot of people, with a lot of people, you know, that sort of Gordon Gekko greed is good kind of thing writ large. and that, you know, and I find that just grossly offensive.
Yeah, well, that man is president now.
The manifestation of the manifestation of a lot of that belief system is president now. Right. And I don't know. I mean, I want to ask you this because this is something that has been coming up on a lot of the podcasts that I listen to and being written about in articles. But right now, a lot of us are becoming sort of like we're walking around in a permanent state of just pissed offness because all of the news is bad.
Yeah.
And there's you know, what we are seeing a lot of from the Trump administration is this sort of like active provocation.
Yeah.
Almost everything that is being done right now is being done to piss off liberals.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not, I do not believe that it is being done to make anything better. I think it is actively being done to make things worse.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that's coming from my standpoint. I'm sure a lot of people think that things are going to be great. Well, just wait a few months. Yeah. Okay. So all of, you know, every single day you have five things that are going to piss you off, almost without fail.
Even today, not too long ago, and this will come up a lot later, so this is old news by now, but Donald Trump banned CNN and some other people from this press briefing.
Yeah, of course. Right. You know, and he reiterated today at CPAC at the annual conservative convention that the media is the enemy of the people.
Yeah.
He stands by that.
Yeah.
And you know, and so we hear on virtually a continual basis, and maybe even more, it's just this has been just sort of a shit torrent this week because of Milo Yiannopoulos, because of some of the statements that are being made by Steve Bannon this week, and by Trump himself, you know. So it's like, you know, you get through half your day, you know, and you decide to look at your news feed and it's like shit. Everything. It's just an absolute mess. And how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm asking you, how do you deal with being, because under normal circumstances, you know, maybe you have one thing that makes you mad.
Sure.
But, you know, but now you have, you know, sometimes dozens.
Well, to my second thing is it's going to be okay.
that's right.
So yeah. the sort of catch 22 about it's going to be okay is that no matter what happens, however not okay these things that happen are, is sort of that it will eventually become okay anyways, that if we all die in a nuclear holocaust or whatever afterwards, like, well,
the cockroaches will have a good life.
Yeah, the cockroaches have a good life. Billions of years later, whenever another intelligent life form comes up, like, they'll look at the Earth and be like, man, they screwed up and we know how to, like, It's a silly, stupid form of optimism that I have.
Right.
That,
so like, you know, it'll be fine for like Will and Jaden Smith when they come back to Earth thousands of years later and they see the mutant jungle cats. Well, the mutant jungle cats are doing just fine.
Yeah. But
that's a terrible movie. I don't even know why that, but it. but it's been applicable. Made it,
and Will Smith has money, so. but to an extent, I acknowledge that this shitstorm of things is adding up to something.
Right.
We're obviously just in the middle of what's going to be in some history book someday, and mm-hmm. be like, man, look at what happened.
Yeah.
But good things usually come out of really bad things, which is like the more that Donald Trump's administration is going to continue pissing off us.
Right.
The
majority of people.
Yes. The more that adds up, it's the more people that are going to get pissed off, the more people who are going to say, you know what, I'm not going to sit by and do nothing anymore. I
yeah.
can't do nothing anymore. Mm. More people are going to wake up. More people are going to start saying something. More people are going to do something about
right.
it, as opposed to for many years now, the sort of passive, like, well, it's not affecting me yet.
Mm.
It's not affecting my community yet. And so, yes, we're sort of on the inverse of that, where the rural communities had their sort of stand up and do something about it and
mm-hmm.
elected Donald Trump. And,
right.
you know, whenever things weren't helping them, they decided to do something about it themselves.
Right.
What it's really adding up to is that we're going to see something either anticlimactic and kind of boring, where it's just like, well, the political process sort of takes care of the blah blah blah, and then like everything just sort of
comes out in the wash.
Yeah,
and yeah, and like nothing really happened, nothing to see here. We just kind of there's a changing of the guard, and things kind of like even out.
Yeah,
right?
Which at least is a pretty all right thing. Like,
yeah.
we don't have a demagogue anymore. Sure.
Right.
But on the, like, really big side, you could have, like, a full-on civil war that is just, like,
right.
a massive just denial of, like, we are not dealing with this anymore.
Right.
And so...
Well, like, okay, so I mean... Yeah, there are a lot of possibilities for, you know, I was just reading not that long ago a column in which somebody was saying, you know, like, really the last thing that you want at this stage of the game is for Donald Trump to be impeached,
mm-hmm.
because you might very well have a civil war on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that may or may not be true. I mean, that's, but I do think that, you know, in, you know, the opposite, sort of the more, I don't know, the more extreme version of like things just sort of like coming out in the wash and everything
mm-hmm.
just sort of reverts back to normal, is that you end up having like, you know, having to have truth and reconciliation commissions
mm-hmm.
like they had in South Africa
sure.
After apartheid, where, you know, you have to, you know, there's sort of an airing of everything that happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's painful.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, it's, you know, I don't think, I mean, you know, South Africa is hardly what I would call a utopian society. They have high crime rates. They have, a lot of civil unrest there.
Mm.
You know, so it is very hard to come back from a trauma,
mm-hmm.
a civil trauma of any kind. Did Germany ever fully recover from, from being ruled by Hitler?
Well, that part of those repercussions were like how the UN sort of stomped Germany into the ground. That is part of why they didn't really recover.
Yeah, but there's also sort of like the psychic damage that
mm-hmm.
an entire country has to deal with mm-hmm. for decades and decades afterward. For over 70 years at
yeah.
this point. Obviously Godwin's law and all that. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen to us,
mm-hmm.
but I do think that, we are at a sort of like pivot point
mm-hmm.
where we're going to have to decide who we're going to be.
Yeah.
And it will not be easy.
Yeah. One thing to consider is that, America is really young.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at...
About that.
Yeah, like, France has just gone through just,
mm-hmm.
like, shitstorm after shitstorm throughout, like...
Right.
But, like, you can look back and be like, oh, well, that was 200,
mm-hmm.
300 years ago.
England, too. And, you know, that, like, but there you... but, you know, when... Elvis Costello writing a song, like Oliver's Army in the late 70s, that's talking about Oliver Cromwell, and
mm-hmm.
and we're, England is still dealing with its bastards hundreds of years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
we're teenagers. That's what, that's not an original thought. A lot of people have said that the United States is sort of
mm-hmm.
the world's teenager.
Yeah, but we're the world's teenager with a lot of money and a lot of nukes.
Mm-hmm.
And so another way to like look at that perspective is that the rest of the world is just staring at America in both awe and fear.
Right. Well, they want to know what the hell we're doing.
Yeah. Because other countries that do depend on America to have their shit together
mm-hmm.
Are sort of looking at us going like, please don't collapse. We need you.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, do we really want to need you anyways?
Yeah. That is a... If there are a lot of things that that the world depends on us for, there are relatively trivial things like sort of the world's culture, popular culture,
sure.
kind of originates from us, generally
yeah.
speaking,
which is really important.
Which is still really important, but then you also we are responsible for a good portion of the world's economy as well. But if we become too crazy,
mm-hmm.
then maybe some of the people that we owe money to, Trump's favorite subject, China.
Yeah.
They just decide, well, fuck it, we're calling in our chips.
Yeah.
And then. And then you really do have a global crisis.
Yeah.
So a lot of it, a lot of where the U.S. stands, kind of like holds everything in balance.
Mm-hmm. But we're not as important as we think we are.
We're not as important as maybe we were.
Yeah. I think
but we still are pretty damn important.
To a certain extent, a lot of different countries are probably just going to try and dissociate as much as they can. Just be like, you know what, we'll just go somewhere else for our business and, not have to worry about it. And,
yeah.
and to an extent, it's sort of the rest of the world putting the teenager in a timeout,
mm-hmm.
And going, we just can't deal with you right now. And so America's going to have to sit here in its...
in its timeout.
Yeah, and
pouting.
We're going to be like, well, no, we were the best. We're the greatest. And what happened?
Yeah.
So
the last time I was in London, my taxi driver
mm-hmm.
was like, we... we were driving around Hyde Park, and he was like, he was pointing out statues like you do, you know, and he said, you know, I mean, he said, that's when we were great.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's an awful feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of an Anglophile, so I really like a lot of what Britain gives us, you know, in the world. But when, you know, when sort of the rank and file, that's kind of like how they perceive the country. That's a rough place to be.
Yeah.
If you look at history, how many nation states have been in that same position? You know, Greece, Egypt, you know, Italy, like the Ottoman Empire, Turkey, all of these nations that were once sort of the most prominent or like maybe greatest power in the in the world at any given time are no longer.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, and Britain follows in the same route. France follows in the same route. Of course, we have this concept called American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
And so we think, that we are different. It can't happen to us. Well, it can. It absolutely can.
And it's probably about to.
And it's probably about to, because that's the way that it's circle of life, right? But maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you can't. Maybe you can course correct.
Yeah.
But we should never think that it can't happen to us.
Yeah. And to an extent, I feel as though if a course correction were to happen, it's not going to happen through more of this, closing off to yourself,
right,
only caring about yourself. Mm-hmm. It can only get better by opening up to each other. Mm-hmm.
Do you think our society, and I know we did sort of talk a little about this in class, but do you think that we as individuals have sort of walled ourselves off into our own sort of little bubbles or ecosystems?
Yeah, and that's not our fault.
No, but we were given the opportunity to go there, right?
Which is why, like, I still think that, I don't have free will, and I choose my Facebook friends, but, like, our society sort of told us to do that, and the way that we've walled ourselves off is what seemed ideal to us, is that I don't like seeing this person on my feed or whatever, and so I just rather not.
So ka-blocked.
Yeah.
Right.
But
it starts with fairly innocuous things.
Mm-hmm.
We now have, to take it into more of the pop cultural realm, we have an option to listen to exactly what we want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
We can watch exactly what we want to watch when we want to watch it. We have, we became sort of a playlist society.
Yeah.
Where, as opposed to, having a collective experience with everybody around us. That whole thing that we talked about where, when there were five channels on TV, chances are you and 100 million other people were watching the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you were having kind of a collective experience with this one thing. Well, now you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Because, so we will no longer have those sort of like shared experiences, like Michael Jackson's Thriller or something like that, where everybody's listening to one thing at a given time. we all have our own private Michael Jackson's Thriller that we're really crazy about, but nobody else, you know, but very few people are part of that same club. And so that can, I guess, translate into having that same sort of experience with less trivial things, like, you know, like politics, where we, you know, we surround ourselves, like we were saying in the last hour, with the information that we want to experience.
But they're still outliers. And given that it works within capitalism, that's where it comes from. But the monopolies are sort of where it's coming from, these sort of collective experiences. So, like, Stranger Things was a collective experience.
Not on the grand scale of your collective experiences of old, but when it was something that resonated with a whole lot of people.
And it also kind of says something about the fact that it was incredibly nostalgic too. So old age idea of like, man, Michael Jackson's Thriller is
old age.
Well, I'm sorry, but
a lot of the cultural touchstones that became part of Stranger Things were obviously like the Spielberg movies, and those were movies that, like, every damn person you knew was going to go see E.T. that weekend, you know. And you didn't have options to, like, watch it on home video necessarily, because in 1982, when it comes out, there, you know, most people didn't even have VCRs at that point. So it's, you know, so you had to have that sort of, like, collective shared experience. And so you're saying, like, with Stranger Things, even though it's like you have the option of watching it when you want to watch it, still there's, like, maybe, you know, a groundswell on social media and all of those things, and so everybody starts talking about this.
To an extent, that's kind of how I am technology everything once again, I would embrace the singularity once it came. And so I think that technology has allowed us to have that in a way again, so that we have a refining of who we listen to or whatever, but since everything is interconnected, you still are going to have these interconnected people that, even though you're not friends with this person, one of the friends that you're with saw that someone else really liked The Force Awakens, and so The Force Awakens is another one that was just a big, like, everyone watched it. And so we're still interconnected, even though we're still closed off. And so another way of...
We have little lifelines from our bubbles.
Another way of having these sort of collective ideas comes from technology, in that a lot of people say that social media has allowed us to sort of seclude ourselves and sort of become this very refined bubble. But at the same time, we are still connected. And so through technology, through also just advancements in technology, I think that we'll become much more connected whenever self-driving cars become, like, mass use.
How do you think?
Because
sometimes I think that, you know, that with self-driving cars, we're going to become even less engaged because we don't have to fucking pay attention to whatever's on the road. And so we're just going to be on our phones.
to the extent that I have this sort of ideal of a technology-based society, something likened to the Venus Project, that once we realize that something is better just on its own,
mm-hmm.
we sort of go to it regardless of, like, our own individual things, because the something being better regardless is just better.
Yeah.
And so to the extent that I think that parking lots could just go away because you don't need a car to just stop somewhere. It'll just go somewhere else, pick someone else up, or, you know, like...
Okay, and that's under the...
That's far in the future,
well,
but...
That becomes something more along the lines of a, like, public transport kind of model, whereas I think we are, like, we are a long way from that, because you know, the people who are going to get the first self-driving cars are rich people who are going, who, you know, are, you know, can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then it's going to sort of, like, trickle down from there as the technology becomes cheaper.
Yes.
So I think really at the, I don't know. We're such an ownership society.
Yes.
I don't know that it's going to become like Spokies, you know, where you just, like, you know, grab a bike and ride across town and then put it at the new Spokies on the other end of town and leave it for the next person. I don't know that people have a hard time divorcing themselves from the idea of, this is my car, you know?
At the same time, Lyft and Uber.
Yeah.
Whenever people realize, you know, I don't have to drive, someone else can drive, mm-hmm. and we all chip in for the Uber, and so we don't have to drive drunk or anything because our Uber is driving us and we all chip in. We as a small group get in the one Uber and and so that way people find a way to get sort of a smaller version
mm-hmm.
of the of what the rich people have,
right?
And make it work their own way, and sometimes better.
Yeah.
So rather than the rich guy who owns the Tesla is having his self-driving car,
mm-hmm.
you might also have some startup that buys a whole bunch of Teslas,
right?
And goes, these are for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and through that, we get the obvious benefits of, you know, less car wrecks, because humans are shitty drivers, but, you also get the added benefit of, like, well, why would I get a Lyft with, you know, some weird stranger if I can just do the, whatever the startup is that has the self-driving cars and, you know, mm-hmm. not have to deal with the awkward driver.
Or having to give them 5 stars.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's a hard thing because, you know, on the one hand, you know, there's a lot of people who are driving for Lyft or for Uber that, you know, they kind of need the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're going to
hit that wall.
You know, we're going to hit that wall, just like we, you know, just like we did with, you know, or like we're doing with you know, checking out from grocery stores, or the Amazon store that you talked about, and things like that. It's, you know, we will kind of get to more depersonalization, I think.
Sure.
In some respects.
But yeah, we can either go like full Black Mirror, or we can acknowledge the benefits of certain things,
and
use them for what they benefit us. Mm. And cause I feel like that's sort of natural selection in a way, technology has its own natural selection, and sort of capitalism has its own natural selection.
Right.
And it will eventually fall out of capitalism, hopefully, if I say hopefully,
because
I'm a dirty communist.
Yeah.
But because eventually we'll see that certain other things work better.
Yeah. Sure.
And so the things that work better will just continue to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the small example of a self-driving car, that works better than humans driving, with the bigger examples of, you know, who is running society. Should it be politicians who have their own interests, or should it be a computer that says we have this many resources and this is where they're going to go?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's wrap all that up.
Okay, so I got to ask you: do they get this involved? I mean, because this has been a pretty wide ranging conversation.
Depends on the guest and what they're open to talking about.
Right. Right.
So sometimes it sits in just like talking about comic books and video games for a whole hour, or it can get this big.
Exactly. Well, you know, as far as, you know, we've put it all out there. These are some ideas.
Sure.
If you wonder, please run with them. Make this world better. You know, socialism is pretty damn awesome. I would love to have 6 weeks of vacation and paid medical and family leave and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Only with a government you can trust.
That's right. Exactly.
George, thank you for doing this with me.
It's a pleasure. It was a blast.
Where can we find your things?
Find my things at, I'm on Twitter at George D. Lang. I host Spy 101, 8 p.m. on Saturdays on The Spy at KOSU. I teach at ACM. If you want to take classes, you should here. And then I write stories for the Gazette. And I am a PR professional working with musicians and businesses, and I'm a Detective Wednesdays on ABC.
Awesome. Thank you again. And I'm Santiago Ramones. You can find all the things that I do on my website, santiagoramones.com, where you can find my music, because I'm a composer, and you will find this podcast, which I always end with my three things that form my life philosophy, which are: love never fails. It's going to be okay. I might be wrong.